You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
I got to play on the Sabbath show one time. They were on Ozfest and Pantera was on it. And I went out and I got the pleasure to sit behind Mike Bordin playing with Ozzy and Sabbath for six shows before my makeup show, because Mike had to go and fly back to Faith No More. They were starting their tour and Ozzy had blown his voice and missed a show and they needed a drummer for that makeup show. That's how I got Sabbath. So when I was out though in the Ozfest, and not only do I get to watch fucking Mike Bordin from 2 feet, like his, I was like his drum tech every night. It was insane. But, and then Vinnie Paul during Sabbath takes some chick underneath Bordin's riser. And he had asked Mike Bordin, you know, can I, and Mike's like, go on stage. Mike's like, go ahead, man. And he fucked, they crawl under his, and Vinnie bangs his chick underneath his riser while Black Sabbath's on stage. So that's fucking, that's a brick wall right there, baby.
Hey, welcome to another episode of 2020. My name is Corey Peza. I'm here as always with the what, I don't even know what we're calling ourselves now. The something, some group
the
of
cohorts,
people.
The cohorts. The parts.
No, hold on. How about, I want a new one. Why don't we call ourselves the Triumvirate?
I already came up with that one.
No, I know. I'm saying I'm bringing it back.
Okay, the Triumvirate. Benny Goodman and Siobhan Cronin. How's it going, guys?
Hey, great episode.
Feeling a little sleepy. Feeling a little burnt out.
I feel like the womp womp's coming from the nitrous after talking to David Abruzzese and Shannon for 2 hours and change, man. Holy fuck.
Yeah, like a double whammy episode. Yeah. Like, what an incredible thing to observe.
We cannot even begin to explain. Just know that you have to watch this episode. If you're listening, make sure at some point you go back and watch it because it's a very visual
episode.
Well,
you have to listen to the video. We got to show them the video of them, of David serving
listen
Shannon.
Listen to the video.
Yeah. I will put it in. I will put it in right before the intro to the show, so everyone can check that out, which is going to happen right now. Just let's get right into it. The craziest show we've had so far, definitely, with Shannon Larkin of Godsmack and David Abruzzese of Pearl
Jam. As a co-host, by the way, yes. As our co-host, getting 2020 because David agreed. See you soon.
Shannon Larkin. Hello, sir.
It's Dave Abruzzese. Why don't you come join us this Sunday? Get 2020'd again with me. We'll have a chit chat. Be good to talk to you. Last time I talked to you, let's see, 1980, you were wearing a boa constrictor around your neck, and there was like a no deposit, no return, I think was the big song, Wrathchild USA. Been a while. Hopefully we'll see you on Sunday. All right?
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Benny Goodman, and you're here at an extra, extra special episode of 2020.
Very exciting.
I'm here with my cohorts in crime, Siobhan Cronin.
Hi, everyone. I'm excited for this
Corey Peza.
Cheers.
And for the first time ever, we have an honorary host, Mr. Shannon Larkin of Godsmack and the Apocalypse Blues Revival.
Welcome.
Woo!
And then... a guest that I know the internet has requested back, especially considering I talk over him endlessly and they want to know
more
about
him
himself.
You're going to get your third or fourth chance here.
David Abruzzese from Pearl Jam, from the international motherfuckers, from Zootopia, and also just a philosopher in life. Hi, Dave.
Our dear friend, yeah.
I'm really looking forward to when my beanie starts to rise up.
So are we.
It's all about the accessories today. We've got all sorts of hats and additions to our show.
So let's jump right into the absolute insanity. So people saw a video ahead of time of David sort of serving Shannon after he heard that Shannon was like, I'll come on as a co-host. And he reminded the world that at some point you guys crossed paths. And Shannon was wearing a boa constrictor in his band Wrathchild America. Could you please tell us what was going on, David?
I think the band was just called Wrathchild at the time.
Or whatever. Yes.
You guys had the American to it or whatever. No, it was a killer band. Are you kidding me? It was at a club called On the Rocks in Dallas. Yeah. And Shannon came in. I got there early because I wanted to see the sound check because everyone was telling me this fucking killer drummer, Joey Ellis, this player I was in the band with. Oh, you got to see this drummer, man. He's just amazing. So I showed up early and Shannon came in with a and snakes freaked me out. I'm just going to be honest. He came in with a sifter around his neck. And I thought, oh, shit. How am I going to approach this guy and say hello?
Yeah, I toured with that thing, man. I toured with my snake back then.
Where did your snake go at night? Like, how did that work?
I had it in a pillowcase that I slept in bed with it, you know? Yeah.
I remember you put it in the pillowcase, and that's when I went up to you and said hello.
Wow.
That's so funny, man, because I totally remember on the rocks, and I remember playing that. Those were good days, you know? That was just a... So are you from there, Dave? Dallas?
I made most of my mistakes in Dallas, so I say I'm raised there, but I'm from Connecticut, so.
Nice.
Yeah, that was a great show, and you did not fail to impress me. It was just, ever since then, I've always, you know, I get on YouTube every now and again, I'll pop in your name and see what the hell you're up to. I was surprised about Candlebox when I heard about that.
Yeah, you know, that was something that I wasn't in the band, and you know, I was in this punk band named Amen, and our manager managed Candlebox. So that's how that all went down. And I'd never met Kevin or any of the guys, you know, but man, when we toured and Pete Klett was just, you know, let loose for the first time, and he was kind of, you know, finding that side of him. And boy, did we have fun. It was really like old school debauchery, and just, we just fucked shit up. It was rad.
Right. I went at one point I met with Kevin. He had asked me if I would consider joining the band, and we met at a coffee shop, and it was kind of a dark day and it was raining out, and we met, and he was wearing these big old sunglasses, and it was the most rock star I'd ever met. And I've, you know, and I mean, hung out with Axl, you know, but Kevin topped it. Somehow he topped it.
Yeah, it's so funny, man, you say that. Whenever I talk to Kevin, whenever I talk to him, I say, hey, my favorite rock star. He's my favorite rock star. And because once you know, he's a rock star, but he's just so normal and rad. Oh. I love that guy. I really do. And he has his own merch company now, too, that he does, you know, for bands like my Apocalypse Blues thing, where you don't have money or whatever. And because he does, you know, you don't have to order so many of them, and he gives really good deal for bands because the dude doesn't need money, you know what I mean?
That's good.
He's one of those musicians that he's super like still doing it just for music, you know, which says something, you know.
Yeah, sure does, especially now. So what about you, Shen? Are you doing it just for music?
Yeah, well, I'm lucky, Dave. I got this band, Godsmack, you know, with this dude, Sully Arna, who's a rock genius, I think. And, you know, it's been, geez, 18 years now. And like, we've just, you know, we're just like this band, you know, like we never like jumped up to stadiums like y'all or whatever, but we, you know, keep us a steady fan base and been successful, you know? And so since that, and it's his vision, you know, he's the dude and man, the main songwriter. And, you know, he has the whole vision of what he wants this record to sound like and the next record and blah, blah, blah. And so it, you know, affords me to be able to do the side thing just for music. And I don't have any pressure, you know what I mean? Like I play for Sully, you know, in Godsmack, you know, like, and he's by the way, an excellent fucking drummer.
Yeah, that, I've seen it.
And when I first met him, man, it was back in Wrathchild, and we were playing the Attic in North Carolina. Remember the Attic? Everybody I played there from the 80s because it was just the place in Carolinas. But and so he came there with Reed from COC. Remember Reed Mullen? And Reed told Sully, like, dude, you know, well, their friend Todd had said, you got to see this guy, fucking Shannon or whatever. And Sully ended up coming back to my room at night. I don't remember if I have my snake, but it was back in those days, man. And it was party time, man. And I swear to you, man, we exchanged numbers and we were just friends for like, you know, literally 16 years before he asked me to join his band, you know, which I turned down. And I had just signed a deal with this punk band, Amen. And so he's like, dude, man, you know, we got all the labels and blah, blah, blah. And we're selling out the Hammer Jacks or whatever it was. And I'm like, I can't do it, man. You know? And then their record came out, sells 5 million copies or whatever. But then luckily, you know, Tommy Stewart, the first drummer on the first two records, just, I guess, you know, they just didn't get along. And I got the call because of my bro. But, man, I forget why I was on myself. That's
he was asking if you're in it for the music. Are you in it for the music, Shannon?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Are you?
You know it, Benny. But so that whole thing, Dave, was like getting Godsmack, you know, and having, you know, because Bradshaw was my thing, too. You know, like that was my band. And, you know, I started as a kid, all this shit. But and so joining somebody else's band and that has all this vision, all this creativity, it's all he has. Like, I can't, all my ideas are not like commercial and they're, you know, very eclectic, you know. And so, and I can't express myself through that. So basically in Godsmack, man, I try and just, I focus on the drums and I'm drummer's drummer, man. I love the drums still this day and the sounds and the tuning and everything I do in the studio. But man, he's, you know, on top of every beat and fill and what cymbal I'm hitting, everything, man. He's very, you know, because he has a vision, he knows what he wants. So if I hadn't been blessed with, like, you know, to be able to be successful and be able to do my own music, then I'd be living in a fucking one bedroom apartment and do my own music anyway. But I got lucky.
Yeah.
I got lucky and got high with fucking Sully Erna 25 years ago.
Would you say that Sully's kind of like your Frank Zappa and you're like Vinny Colaiuta in this case, where he's like, you're just like completing his vision in his head and it doesn't matter, Shannon. He loves you, but he doesn't care. You're just making the music in his head, but go take the money and go play in the Apocalypse Blues revival, right? And now you make genius. And when Sully's gone, you'll be part of the biggest thing ever.
Thing is, like Dave can tell you, is like, even if he tells me, hey, I wanted to go ooh bap, ooh ooh bap, you know, the way I go ooh bap, ooh ooh bap isn't going to be exactly like the other guy. It's just like guitar players, you know, like anybody can like learn fucking Eruption exactly like it, but it's not going to sound like Eddie Van Halen playing it because of his fingers. And you could play, be playing on the same fucking guitar through the same fucking amp, same effects and everything, but Ed's fingers sound different than your fingers and my fingers, you know, just like
another string. Dave, string.
You know what I'm saying, Dave?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, man, I'm just going to do it again. I did it back in the 1980s. I'm going to do it again. Man, you were, blew my mind back then. You played your ass off. It was great. And it sounded, in that little club, it sounded amazing. The drums were thunderous. And I was so inspired. I used to, you know, go to concerts just to see drummers. And then I just want to play, you know, I never grew up with that feeling of, you know, like, oh, that guy just, you know, makes me want to quit or anything like that. It always drove me. And you were one of the drummers that drove me. It was like, man, I gotta get back to learning how to catch that thing and twirl this other one.
I tell you who did that to me was when I first saw King's X, man, back in those 80s. And that Jerry Gaskell guy, he changed me, man. I was like, I got to go practice, boy. That was just amazing, too. But I never got to see you play back then, man.
Man, we took King's X out, Pearl Jam did, for 3 months, I think it was. And it was amazing. Actually, you know, Jerry came up and we played WMA once live, and he came up and played with me, and it was just, I was beaming. You know, it was like him and Nico came up one day and did a jam on Porch with me. And it was like, man, love that stuff.
Awesome, man.
Yeah, after that, being Chad Smith's kick drum one time, I laid under his floor toms and played the...
Oh, I love this story.
with a stick because his pedal broke. Man, those times are just the best. And you're right up there, you know, top five, just like, oh, wow. Man.
I tell you this about Chad Smith. I think he's the greatest living rock drummer. I mean, I'll say that out loud.
Yeah.
And I have such stars in my eyes for Chad Smith, and I always have. And I'll tell you, one time I had this thing on the side, another side thing. I'm always doing some side thing. And It was called Another Animal, right? And so I had Whit Crane singing, my singer from Ugly Kid Joe, and he, and I love that guy. So anyway, through the side thing, we're in LA at those the NAMM show, right? And they booked us this show, and it was Chad Smith on drums, Glenn Hughes on the bass, and vocals.
Oh my God.
I'm at the sound check thing or whatever, and we did a sound check. Of course, we were opening for, you know, whatever the super group was called. I think Paul Gilbert was on guitar. It was just super group, and they were just jamming like fuck, you know, covers and obviously songs from their great super groups. And so I were standing there talking, blah blah blah, and whatever. There's a bunch of people around this NAMM show, but it's sound check. So, and all of a sudden the drums start playing a beat in the background. And just from the sound of the snare, I was like, that's Chad Smith. And I turned around, it was Chad Smith.
Wow, that's incredible.
And, you know, yeah, just, but, yeah, you know, there's not many drummers that just can, it's like when Eddie Van Halen played guitar or whatever, you know.
I'll give you a drummer I saw that's like that, who blew my mind. I would never thought. Kenny Aronoff.
Oh, yeah, dude.
I met that guy, and he walks in with the longest fucking scarf you've ever seen. He's only like 5'1". He's got his sunglasses that are like this big. And he went, dude, he played with Doug Pinnick from King's X and Satch for the Experience Hendrix thing. He walks on stage, and he's just fucking slamming shit, but he's smiling like Guy Smiley, and he's just fucking all Spinal Tapped out, and it's Satch playing Hendrix, and then Doug Pinnick singing and playing bass. And I thought to myself, dude, the whole drum riser was shaking. I mean, he hits like so hard, I can't believe his drums didn't actually break.
And he, you know who's the hardest hitter guy I've ever seen is Mike Borden.
Oh yeah, Faith No More, dude.
That dude, and he's a sweetheart too. I love him too.
Puffy. But,
Mike Borden hits the drums like he's like they owe him money. And you know, I got to know Mike, got to visit him and his lovely wife in San Francisco, and he invited me to his house, and we sat, and I was just blown away because I expected him to be the type of guy that played the drums the way he plays the drums. And that's when I realized that, wow, you know, it's like a bipolar thing. He's so powerful behind the kit, and he's such like just low key, really sweet, nice guy, genuinely nice guy. It blew my mind. It was such a treat. And you were talking about the NAMM show. I was talking to Kenny one day. I hadn't been to the NAMM show in many years. I kind of disappeared for a while. When I came back, first person I ran into was Kenny, and he was like, hey, you know, he's really over the top and fun. And he's talking to me, and then Chad came up and tackled me to the ground.
Jeez.
I love the fraternity we're in, Shannon. I just do, man. I love it.
Absolutely. Oh, man. Well, I'll tell you a Mike Borden story. So I was in wherever. I think it was Australia, let's say. And Mike Borden was, it was Faith No More somewhere. God damn it. I'm so burnt. But anyway, so I'm somewhere in the world, right? And I get the opportunity for this legend guy who I'd never met. I met him very briefly one time, just shook his hand. And most time when I meet rock stars, I can't fucking speak because I'm so blown away. So I'm that guy. I just shut up and shake their hand. I hope they're nice. But, so Mike Borden on a night off, my band, it was Godsmack. Fuck my band. I was new to the band. So whatever, it was our first time we went to Australia or whatever. And Faith No More was headlining the whole festival thing. So, you know, they're king fucking ding-a-ling down there everywhere. And so fucking Borden on a night off, we were doing to make money because we, you know, we're like the third band on the stage down there or whatever. So we were playing on our nights off at the clubs, you know, that, you know, try and spread our thing in Australia, whatever. And Borden takes it on himself to come out and fucking see us alone, by the way. And he comes up, and somehow he comes up to the back of the backstage door. We let him in. I'm like, oh my God, Mike fucking Borden, right? So anyway, we get to talking. I'm taking pictures. I'm hugging him. I'm touching him, trying to just, you know, steal some of his good energy. You know what I mean? I'm like, can I just touch you, dude? And fucking next thing you know, oh, I got great pictures of, he's holding me like a koala bear or some shit. It was like, I was like, Jesus, I'm in Australia, fucking meeting Mike Bourne, Jesus. So, and so anyway, so he goes, what kind of snare are you using? This is one of those moments, Dave, that you go, whoa. Cause like, you know, and I have another one I'll tell you too, but anyway, he's like, what kind of snare are you using? I'm like, oh, I'm using the Mike Bourne fucking signature. I'm like, I'm using your fucking snare, dude. Right. He's like, oh. I'm like, yeah, dude. And he goes, and all seriousness, he's like, listen, Shannon, if, have you broken it? And I go, we ain't broken it. No, I haven't broken it. And he goes, well, I go, what do you mean broken it? He goes, the shell. And now Mike Bourne's snare, it's like a fucking, you know, it's a thick, it's like a Black Beauty or so. It's a heavy brass snare, right? And it's nickel, it's black coated and all this shit. Anyway, it's a heavy, it weighs fucking 30 pounds. And he's like, have you broken the shell yet? I'm like, no. He goes, listen, I can have you a special one made. He goes, I get my made special. He goes, I can have you special one made that are a lot thicker. And I'm like, dude, you are fucking crazy. How do you break it? I've never in my life, have you, I mean, broken a shell from?
Yeah.
I weigh 105 pounds, but.
I got meaty elbows, man. Big wrists.
I got beefy elbows.
Yeah, I had a flipping and tip that started out as an 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, and it ended up as just, that's when I went down to that 16, 18. It was 12, 16, 18 because the other toms broke off the mounts. But I was playing with DC-10 then. Remember those sticks?
Fucking baseball bats.
Yeah, that's right.
But that's one thing, David, I can totally say unequivocally about you is every single time I hear you send me a drum track or even just hear your drums on any recording, and I watch the international motherfuckers, I watch a whole performance of you guys, and you guys are first off sick, but you could tell it's you because you hit the drums like you say Puffy hits the drums. First off, doesn't Puffy play his hi-hat on the right so he can hit it harder? Yeah, I'm pretty sure that he does that. And when you play, David, I swear to God, like it just, and you play first off in big rooms, so you can hear the reverb, but it literally sounds like gunshots. It's
your drums sound fucking huge when you play those stadiums.
But even the clubs, go watch the international motherfuckers with Stevie Salas. Holy shit, dude.
Bozio.
Bozio, I don't know which one. They're missing people.
I don't want to say Bozio because you don't want to say like Bozo or whatever.
I've always said Bozio, but then I felt like I heard, I don't know if it was Steve said Bozio, or maybe he was just copying me to be nice. I don't know.
I don't either. I don't think anybody does it. Because how about when like Carmen Appice and Vinny Appice and they came up with that? Like the real name, who knows which way is the right way?
Appice versus Appice, yeah.
They said to each other, look, so we could separate our fucking vibes, you know, because you're famous over here and whatever, Rod Stewart, and you're over here and fucking Eric Clapton or whatever. I'll be Appice, you be Appice. And they said, all right. But that's true. Those brothers.
How about though, you could go the wrong way. How about the Shankners? You can't play a flying V. Well, I'm in UFO. I had played a flying V before, but no, now you're in the Scorpions. You can't take my flying V. And then they're not friends anymore.
Isn't that crazy?
Because of a flying V, Shannon, all because of a flying fucking V.
But Shanker wins. Shanker wins Michael Shanker for best guitarist in Scorpions.
Hold on, listen, bro. Above everything that I do, okay? I want you to know. In my studio, I keep a picture of Michael because he watches me. It's signed first off, but he watches me at all times because I can't make decisions in good comfort knowing that Michael doesn't agree with me. And I just look over and he tells me, look at that face. He tells me every time.
Man, just a year before, or maybe it was 2 years, 3 years ago, but Michael Shanker went out on tour and he had, the first singer, which I can't remember his name, but from the greatest two Shanker records. But then he had Graham Bonnet, and then he had the new singer, you know, who I haven't heard, but I heard him that night. And then, but it came out and it was called, because Michael Shanker came out and he's so German and he announced it. He like said, welcome to the Michael Shanker attack or whatever it was. And it was so funny. But then they opened my fucking right into the arena, first song, and I was standing like, you know, 30 feet away. It was our club, you know? But the great Graham Bonnet, dude, when he sang, even at his age, it's like 3 years ago, you could hear, you know, those dudes, you can hear them like when you're standing over the PA, like you can hear him from the stage, kind of from the fourth row. He's that fucking god. All 5 foot five of him or whatever, but man.
Yeah, yeah. Pinnock. My monitor rig was Dave Rapp put a dB meter on my head and it was 124 dB snare.
Jesus Christ.
Oh my gosh. No.
Like, here you have a 747 jet airline, and then you have David Abruzzese, ladies and gentlemen, with the bell brass.
Doug Pinnock got up and sang with us. And I could hear him. I could hear, like, when he'd pull the mic away, I could hear his voice over my drum. Unbelievable.
That's crazy.
He is fucking powerful and beautiful.
Yeah, great. And a great guy. Really great. Humble, just sweetheart.
And dude, do you know, like, I think he just turned 70, and the dude looks like he's fucking 40. I look older than him. I if I get near the light, I'm telling you, man. This is fucking shit, man. You know that shit.
Okay, so in a good way for him, he's ageless. But it's also like a guy like Tommy Aldrich. You go see Tommy Aldrich now, he looked the same when he was in the Blizzard of Oz as he does right now, which is not necessarily a good thing, but it's consistent.
Tommy Aldridge is
by the way, and just so you know, I wanted to ask you guys, can we throw out a drummer here and there? So what do you guys think? I want your opinion as consummate, amazing drummers. Tommy Aldridge, he's one of my favorites. Let's start with him. What do you think, Shannon?
Let me just say, fucking Pat Travers live album, snorting whiskey, drinking cocaine, that just that backwards quad fill he does, and that makes him top five, you know. Fucking rock drumming. Damn. Yeah. I saw him play with Ted Nugent, man. And it was Ted Nugent, Rudy Sarzo, and Tommy Aldridge.
Wow.
And amazing. And he opened for Kiss.
That's the Blizzard of Oz band with Ted Nugent.
Well, kind of, yeah. Right. The real Blizzard band was Lee Kerslake.
And Bob Daisley. I know, but Sharon erased them from history. So let's just leave it there. John Arden. And then Mike Borden came in and re-recorded it. Don't you know that that's the real album? It's Mike Borden and Robert Trujillo.
I asked Mike about that, and he was like, dude, you know, do you think I wanted to really do that, you know, in a classic or whatever, but I'm in the band and fucking, so I go, oh, whatever. Everybody thought the same thing, like, why? And it was all, you know, sharing money thing, you know, about...
Her father was Don Arden.
I know. And I love Sharon Osbourne, by the way. Hi, Sharon.
She's not listening to this.
She might though. Greg works on her show. Was it The Talk? My buddy produces her show.
Might have fucking cyber spies out there every time the word Sharon or Osborne's mentioned. She needs to fucking have her spies tell her, can she make a dime on that?
She has a deal with Alexa.
I'll tell you what, man. So, you know, I played with Sabbath that one show, right? And at the end of it, I was very adamant. I said, look, all I want, Sharon, is just the video. There was a five fucking camera crew, and she had told me that she has every show that Ozzy ever did since he left Black Sabbath in a vault. She keeps every show. She goes, I don't care when, you know. And so for the next once a year, for the next 4 years, which was as long as I got Christmas cards from the Osbournes after I played with them, 4 years. And then so after that, I kind of just quit reaching out and bugging her for it. But so there's film of me playing with Geezer, Tony, and Ozzy at one show, one show with one rehearsal without Ozzy, of course. And I felt like I played well, but anyway, so Sharon, when your cyber Nazis see this, just fucking send me that tape.
Dude, you got to pull a Lee Kerslake. Just tell them you're dying on your deathbed and tell them you want your platinum records, dude. And they'll send them to you. Ask Lee.
I don't know.
Hold on. Tommy Aldridge, David Abruzzese. What do you think about Tommy?
I always thought he hit harder. And then I saw some old video of him, and he used to hit really hard. But no, Tommy's always impressed me. And that would be the thing. I'd go back to that Pat Travers. I was a huge Pat Travers fan, still am. But that record, it was one of the few times that I couldn't visualize what a drummer was doing. Because, you know, that's how I learned, was sitting in my teenage bedroom with my eyes closed and headphones on, you know, picking it apart. And his stuff, I couldn't wrap my head around it.
But it was, you know, when in the song, and I'm not saying it because of the line or whatever, when it goes, when he says, "I got so much cocaine that I can't be found," whatever, that fill behind that line, he starts with the feet, then to the tom snare. So, blah, 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 blah. The up fucking quad, man. I couldn't figure it either, dude. I was like, what the fuck?
Pat Travers haven't figured it out, that's for sure. I've been looking for it. They don't get it.
All right, next on the list, Cozy Powell. What do you think, David?
Michael Schenker Group.
Cozy was the just...
I mean, we're actually covering Gates to Babylon right now, so...
We played on was Cozy playing on it. You know, he's like Chad, like so many drummers that have this feel that's theirs and they own it. Cozy did that. I the first time I really was impressed by him was that first Robert Plant solo record. Oh, what was the name of the song? It was like the only put it in and it was like just and Cozy was playing drum. It was just incredible. Blew my mind. But yeah, no, Cozy's always been one of my favorites. And I didn't see this video on YouTube of him with, did you see the drum battle with him and this little kid? Seen that, Benny?
Maybe I'm actually pretty sure that I have seen it at one point in time. It's fucking rad.
Just, you know, yeah, just a sweetheart of a guy. You know, it's like, when he plays his personality behind the kit, was always just so, you know, it was very stern and very powerful. And then when seeing him doing this drum battle with this like 12-year-old kid on like BBC or something like that, you saw that he had that same intensity, but there was a little bit of cheekiness to it that kind of endeared me to him, you know, as a person. I wish I could have met him, but I definitely feel like I know a good part of him just from his work. But yeah, just... Yeah, hats off, hands up. The great Cozy Powell. Monster.
The great Cozy Powell. Rest in peace. Who's next? Let's talk more drummers.
Oh, all right, dude. I'm going to tell you a guy that totally blew my mind that I'm ashamed that I had no idea. So when the COVID shit first happened, I went back to my records and I started playing stuff I hadn't listened to in a long time. Carl Palmer.
Asia.
Yes, I couldn't comment because I don't really listen to AELP and never did or whatever. But you know what? He must be legendary for something.
Dude, I'm telling you, I think it was like the second. All right, we're gonna skip past Carl Palmer. Right? I have plenty of, okay, a guy that scares me now that I literally think to myself, if anyone was gonna win America Ninja Warrior and they play drums, it's gotta be Virgil Donati. What do you guys think of that fucking crazy dude?
Hold on. Virgil Donati won American Ninja?
No, I'm saying as a drummer. He he's literally like, seen more accurate. Holy shit.
He won the show or whatever.
No, I'm saying for drums.
I'd rather win that show than play on the fucking Virgil Donati's new album. I don't know.
Damn. You know, it's Virgil's style of playing. I guess, you know, drumming, a lot of us are self-taught and we're influenced so much by what's happening as we're growing up and getting inspired. And I'm kind of glad I missed the Virgil train because it was so epic that it would have tested my resolve. But there's so many young drummers that, you know, grew up influenced by him that he's really created this subgenre of next level playing. For just players, for kids like me who had headphones on and, you know, their eyes closed and just went to clubs and saw drummers like Shannon and went home and tried to steal everything cool that they did. Virgil is like, he's one of those guys that has introduced, I mean, yeah, he does things that on a kit that just, it's like you just go, okay, it's not, you know, somebody can do that. I only thought machines were capable of that. Yeah, he pulled it off. Unbelievable.
I got a comment on how well that was said by Dave. Especially, I'm glad that I didn't discover him till later because he would have tested my resolve.
Yeah.
Dude, that amazing. Was, that was fucking genius, man. I got to remember that. Anyway, great answer. All right. What's the next question? That was rad.
So I want to hear what drummers you guys are paying attention to right now. Like, you know, if anyone on tour you've toured with recently
I'm going to ask a very selfish question. How about Paul Lorenzo that you heard on Lost Symphony? You were saying that before we got on, but this we're actually sponsored. Yeah. And in fact, David played on Chapter 2, which you listened to. So I'm sort of curious, what did you think of the drumming on those records?
I thought that it was amazing. That's like I said, that's some very progressive symphonic. For sure, the name of the band, it is symphonic metal like, and I mean, the guitar players, I don't even know
next
what to
level.
Say.
Yeah,
I mean, it's hard for me to ever have heard things that fast. You know what I mean? I mean that's virtuosity right there. But the drummer, that Paul guy, wow! I mean, you know, it's just I could probably. Maybe have done it as a youngster, but now I couldn't sit down and play that shit, man. You know what I mean?
He's very close to your age.
It'd take me like fucking 6 months of rehearsing 2 hours a day to get back up to that fucking speed.
Yeah, true story about this. Paul did not rehearse one of those songs. He came in every single time, smoked weed, drank Dunkin' Donuts, listened to the song, and then played to it, and then fucking left and forgot about it.
Well, he's one of those people that
he's an asshole, total asshole.
I envy that. Not because I don't enjoy practicing and working on my drums or whatever, but just because it would free up so much more time to do other shit.
When you sent me the stuff that before you sent me the track to play on, when we were talking about it, you sent me some of the stuff and I was like, oh man, you know, that's just like, ugh. I'm thinking, oh, this is gonna hurt.
Yeah. It's all on a 4-piece Rogers 60s holiday kit, dude, with a 24, just so you know. 4-piece.
And played the way I play and felt the way I feel music, and it worked out just perfect. Luckily enough, I didn't have to go.
Dude, the fact that he played on a song called "The Garden of Earthly Delight," and I honestly, David, like you're like a hot pocket. You totally brought the Bonham because you did this backbeat, like this Moby Dick thing, that allowed for the guys to be so over the top, but gave it such a groove. Because one of my biggest issues with virtuoso music is that people like shred, but like you can't feel it. Like with David playing in the background, you could like, dude, you could be playing Mahavishnu Orchestra and like fucking basic people could still feel it.
Well, to me, that was the same with the way I approached the Pearl Jam stuff and why I put, you know, splash cymbals and all these things into grunge music or whatever. It was that, you know, the problem I had and the thing that I always see when I see young bands at clubs or whatever is that everyone's kind of playing the same thing and there's no meat, there's no ass, you know, that sometimes when the for lack of a better term, guitar hero kind of music, that's what I hear is everybody, you know, like everybody's doing the same thing. You know, there's a little, and the drummer's going, and the bass player going, little. It's just like,
Well, let me ask you both a question. What did you do in the trajectory of developing your drum career that helped you build your own voice? Because it's always interesting to me, especially being a classical musician, we spend our lives like practicing music that has already been done. And it's really hard to create your own voice. So how do you, you know, if you grew up listening to drummers play and you're learning what they're doing, like how did you come up with something new? Like how did you develop your own voice?
Mushrooms.
I was just going to say the fucking same thing, Dave. I swear to God. Right there, man. Right
there. So that's what I'm missing. Okay. Yeah. All right. I'm the odd one out here.
Mushrooms and then just a weed you're smoking, I guess. No, it was, for me, it was, wow. You know, I feel like I'm still looking for that voice in a way, you know? And even like the last question, what drummers are we listening to now? I'm mixing old stuff that I did with Stevie for a new release he's got going. And the drummer I'm listening to most now is me. And it's strange because I'm listening to stuff that I did in 1995. We recorded, you know, 19 songs in 6 days. And when the record came out, I didn't even remember playing most of them. And I was like, that's what, I didn't even know that song existed. You know? But it still,
Sharon Osbourne, you know, wants it like that, David.
Well, what do you mean, from just learn the overwhelming learning all that material, or just you were high?
No, that's the thing. I've never done the studio high. It's one of those things where it's like, I always, or play live, you know, it's, I'm the guy that, you know, when I fuck up, I go to the production office and grab a stack of money and go hand it out in the parking lot. Like, you know.
I smoke pot and I'm an avid, you know, I'm proud of it or whatever. But I can't smoke pot and play drums in rock. I'm like, am I in the second verse? It makes me just lose. I can't know where I'm at. So I never have, you know, like as soon as I get off stage, boom, I fucking get high, but I can't play Stones. So that's another thing I'm envious of, drummers that can just get baked and then sit there and play like the fucking Lost Symphony or something.
Well, there's actually a scientific thing behind that. If you actually had been high when you were learning drums, then when you actually played drums, you'd be better if you were high than if you were sober. But because you want to play in an alternate state than how you practice, therefore, you're not going to do it. So what you need to do is start practicing by being really fucking high on your own time and then work up to it.
Benny, in all seriousness, so last week, you know, we had a 5-day week, Godsmack headquarters here in Florida, right in the new record, right? And so what I've been doing is, you know, I wanted to, because when the pandemic hit, you know, and the next thing you know, we're all sitting around and fucking, I'm getting high during the day now because I'm working my yard all day. It's fucking, you know, everybody's fucking pot, right?
Koi fish and turtles, people.
Yeah, right? So fucking, and so anyway, the big machine fires back up. I'm back to work, man, and I'm kind of digging it. I'm digging on it. Getting up early again and, you know, getting out, doing my thing, you know what I mean? Going to practice for fucking 10 hours, writing songs. So what I would do is, you know, no weed, nothing. And when we get, cause how we do it is we write, like it'll start with a riff or whatever, or a beat. And you know what I mean? And then, oh, you know, what if the bridge, we need a bridge and blah, blah, blah. So hours pass. And so anyway, at the end of the day, we try to have like at least this basic structure that we can play and room mics and just record the fucking thing. So we have like a work tape to make our parts later and all that shit. But it takes all day. So I'm not going to get high all day, all these intricate, you know, it's 3 da-da-dun, and then 4 da-da-dun, and then 2 da-dun, da-da-dun, 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 you know what I mean? So I don't get high. And then when we get the fucking thing finally recorded, and everybody's like, woo. And then we go to the fucking control room, listen to it. All right, we got the work tape. It's good job, guys, or whatever. Then I fucking can get high and reward myself, right? And then so last week that happened and fucking, so I get high and we all listen to it. And then Sully said, well, something is just weird, and played the demo that he'd written it. And it was literally 15 BPM faster, right? And the beat, by the way, was, do do bat batum that do do that or do do bat batum. Oh yeah, do do bat. It was do do bat batum zet do 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 batu batat do do bat datu that do 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 batu do that do do that datu that do 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 batu batat do bat datu that do do bat batu do do, right? So it's a little, and it was, you know, and it fit the
musical tongue twister.
It was complicated. Dave knows what I'm doing, man. You know the do do bat. But
what is do da and ba?
The doo doo is the kick drum. Do do. Okay. And the bap is the snare. Right.
Right. So yeah. Imagine. You know,
I thought pop was how they called coke in the Midwest.
So long story short, the motherfucker says it's fucking 50. It's way too. I don't want it as fast as this, but let's at least bump it back up. So I'm like, oh, so now we got to go back in and re-record this thing. How's that got high. He's like, oh, you know, no. So I go in, right when he's like, all right, and to start the song, I'm like, what's the riff again? Let alone my fucking drum beat. Bap, bap, doo, doo, boo. What was it? I don't know. Next thing you know, I can't like read and write music, you know? And so I just use like a dot for the kick drum and then an X up high for the snare. So I'm all dot, dot, X. X dot, X dot, dot, dot. You do charting it out, trying to read your fucking chart stone, you know.
That's how I do it.
And then Michael Schenker comes in and says, No, it's all wrong.
Oh, so when we went to that show, that club show, Michael Schenker, his son is his tour manager. And so, and some girl or whatever, and I ended up meeting his son saying, hey, man. And he goes, I even used a Godsmack card, you know. Dave, like when you don't really want to, but you want to meet Michael Schenker, so you say, hey, I'm in that band, Pearl Jam, you know what I mean? But so anyway, I really wanted to meet Michael Schenker, you know, and fucking just like 3 years ago, I was like, yeah, I'm in that band, Godsmack. Oh, no shit, man. Let me go tell my old man, you know. Fucking dude goes back and Michael said, wait here. You know, he's coming right out. We stood there for an hour and 15 minutes. Finally, I was like, fuck this shit, man. I got to drive home and shit, man. Anyway. German fucker.
Can I tell you, Vinnie Paul is another one of my favorite drummers. This happened to me. We went to go see Damage Plan, and he says, hey, come wait for us, gives us these after show passes. And then he calls one of my friend Holly, on her cell phone and says, like, when we've been waiting for an hour and 10 minutes that he's wasted playing air hockey with like a bunch of strippers over at the Lowell Brewery, and that we need to come and drink with them. And like, we're all waiting back, like where the fuck? And like, meanwhile, he's like with a bunch of chicks playing air hockey, like down the street drinking already. Fucking yeah. Vinnie Paul, what do you guys think about Vinnie Paul?
Well, I mean, I can say I'm 53. I met Vinnie Paul when I was 16. And, But honestly, you know, Vince was always like, believe it or not, he wasn't like the big party guy. He drank like fish and all and party, but he was a chick guy. And so he always would have chicks. So Dime Dime was the dude that, you know, wanted to party. He wasn't really like me. Like, I wasn't like a Mac or whatever. You know, I would like to party and get fucking, you know, hang out and do crazy shit, man. But, you know, but so Vince and I, although I loved him and we were friends, of course, but we're never close, you know, because he always was gone. Like, as soon as you'd see him backstage for 15 minutes and then he'd be gone with some chick or three chicks or five chicks, whatever. He was that dude. He really was.
We used to play together. And back when Pantera was a cover band playing Van Halen covers and Dokken covers and Rat covers. And
yeah, dude.
Yeah, when the other Terry was singing. I remember the first show when the new guy came in. It was like, you know, let's see, you know, it was called Matley's Phase 2. It used to be like a Bonanza steak restaurant. They turned it into a club, really small place. And man, they were loud. But he came out and you know, had blonde hair shaved on the side, and it looked like a surfer guy and all this. And then I didn't see those guys for a number of years, and went to the Foundation's Forum, and Pearl Jam and Soundgarden were playing it. And I'm standing there, and this hotel was packed, and all of a sudden it parted like the Red Sea, and the murmur, Pantera, Pantera, Pantera. And the Cowboy Schmel just came out, and they walked through, and it was like, I'd never seen such a transformation in a group of guys. But there was no difference in Vinny. Vinny was still
yeah. So true.
Dude. And you know, I mean, Dime was the same, but Dime was always like two next level for me. He was just, the first time I saw him play, he jumped up on a table playing Eruption and the table fell over and he kept playing and I just was blown away. And it was so intimidating because I was a little kid sneaking into clubs and man, that guy was a monster, just a monster.
Yeah.
Vinny, I always thought Vinny was, you know, if somebody asked me to define Vinny in one word, I'd just say loud, loud. Mm. Rest in peace, folks.
The time that I got to play on the Sabbath show one time, they were on Ozfest and Pantera was on it. And I went out and I got the pleasure to sit behind Mike Borden, playing with Ozzy and Sabbath for six shows before my makeup show, because Mike had to go and fly back to Faith No More. They were starting their tour, and Ozzy had blown his voice and missed a show, and they needed a drummer for that makeup show. That's how I got Sabbath. So when I was out though in the Ozfest, and not only do I get to watch fucking Mike Borden from 2 feet, like his, I was like his drum tech every night. It was insane. But, and then Vinnie Paul during Sabbath takes some chick underneath Borden's riser. And he had asked Mike Borden, you know, can I, and Mike's like, go on stage. Mike's like, go ahead, man. And he fucked, they crawl under, and Vinnie bangs his chick underneath his riser while Black Sabbath's on stage. So that's fucking, that's a brick wall right there, baby.
Oh, wow. Man. Wow. And you, that there's your clip right there, Paisa.
Corey's vigorously taking notes.
Yeah, he's taking notes. He's like, what is the timestamp of this one? Vinnie Paul fucks chick underneath Puffy.
During the show.
That's rock and roll, dude.
This comes back to all it started by the question of, like, what, you know, what helped us define ourselves, like, what, you know, as drummers. And it's these stories that kind of help along the way, too, you know. For me, you know, back then there were magazines, and they generated thought, and, you know, and whether it was all the way back to when, you know, the mystery surrounding Zeppelin and their articles, and you know, just that time back before the internet, the dark ages, where print magazines, you know, would they were really good at putting thoughts in your head that would stay there when you were listening to the music. You know, just like album covers, you can do that too, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was part of it for me too, as well. It's like chasing that mystery factor.
Okay. So I know you guys are both Zappa fans. I just watched the documentary myself, Shannon, which you had recommended. I watched it with Paul, our drummer, and I said to him that I needed to show him your videos. By the way, I sat him down because he's an old curmudgeon. He's actually only like two or three. He's like, I think you're about 5 years older than him. And so it's not that he doesn't like Godsmack. He doesn't like any music from the time period you even exist, as far as that stuff. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think he likes Aerosmith past Rocks. You know what I mean? So we sat down. And I showed him all your videos. He was like, that guy's pretty fucking awesome. And I was going somewhere with this, but I got wicked high. So, like, I lost my train of thought. I was trying to follow your train of thought, but now I'm looking at your fucking eyes and I only see myself in there. What's going on over there, Shannon?
All right.
You were asking us about Zappa. I think you were heading down.
Oh, right. Okay. Bozio / Bozio or Kali Uta? Like, which one are you guys as far as in Bozio. That band?
I'm Bozio, man. That baby snakes, Frank Zappa, Bozio.
And David, you?
Is that what he asked? I don't even know.
Are you a titties and beer guy, or are you like more like Joe's Garage?
Jim Gordon.
Wow. Yeah, no, Jim Gordon's fucking amazing. I mean, everyone that's ever played with Zappa was amazing. There's like literally you can't name someone who wasn't good. That was the whole point of being in Zappa, was being ex-Frank Zappa was like being the best of anybody. It's the best pedigree in music.
So Tinseltown Rebellion Band, again, was another, it was a record that tested my resolve. Sure. That was my first exposure to Vinny, and wow. You know, I mean, the first time I saw him play live, I mean, we had talked on the phone and stuff, which was amazing. What a sweetheart. And I went to a Sting show, and I didn't expect to be as blown away as I was. That was next level. That guy is next level. But as far as the Zappa, the influence, you know, I mean, Chester Thompson did some amazing stuff with Zappa as well. It'd be hard for me to break it down into one. I think each Zappa era band, you know,
I kissed this guy
except for Chad Wackerman because I mean, Chad and Chad's unbelievable, but you know, Zappa, Kaluta left, and John Good, the guy who started DW Drums, he was Cayudas Tech, and he was had the amazing ability to make the drums sound the same every night. And Frank loves to edit live drum tracks together. And so when Cayuda left, he wanted to keep John, and John left to start DW. So Chad Wackerman got the gig, and he made him play Simmons drums.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
God bless Chad Wackerman.
Oh, man. He pulled it off, but it's just that ended it for me as far as, you know, that I always felt it like Chad would have gotten so much more of his due if he would have been allowed to play real drums when he was in the Zappa band.
But Chad, like, to adapt, that'd be, I don't know, that's hard. Those things don't even feel real, man. They, you know.
The old days when they really didn't feel real, you yeah, know. And it was,
rubber pads, basically. You're playing a fucking rubber pad.
And
like the practice pads. You remember the old rubber practice pads?
Yeah.
But yeah, man, that'd be a hard gig. And you're playing Zappa, too, and you got to be flawless, too.
Yeah.
And here, play these rubber fucking pads on top of it.
That just sounds like masochism, like hurt me. No.
Yeah. Frank did that shit on purpose.
Hurt me. No. Hurt me. No.
Yeah, that's your question. I'm a fan of all of them, but if I had to choose between the two eras, I'd have to go with the Basio era as well.
Yeah. Titties and beer. Titties and beer prevails overall. I mean, honestly, come on. How much more fun can you have as a drummer than having Frank Zappa tell you that, one, you have to play the devil, not very much of a reach or suspension of disbelief for either of you, and to fucking talk about titties and beer, but seriously, as the devil. And if you see Terry Bozzio, he was a small, like a very petite guy, but like the voice that he conjured up for that song, that's what won me over, that and the Muffin Man. Because the first time I heard the Muffin Man, I said to myself, is this serious? But then I went and listened to the rest of the 4 minutes of the song after Frank spoke. And I said to myself, this is the most serious ridiculousness I've ever heard in my entire life.
Frank does that. Well, I mean,
what I got out of the Baby Snakes was the huge influence stylistically on my drumming from Terry Bozzio. Or Bozio, however he fucking says it.
He needs to come on the show and like get it right, because I kept calling.
We need to verify this.
Abrazizis, Abrazize, and then he came on. He's like, dude, it's Abrazize. It's that easy.
Simple.
So maybe Bozio. He's like, dude, what the fuck? It's just it's Bozio.
In yeah. Shannon's playing, remember, the thing about Baby Snakes when the camera's right over and he's like, he's kind of pushing into the camera and having, I see that in your playing. I remember that. You were dancing back there. You know, it was actually, that's one of the things I took from you back way back then was, you know, you got to dance when you play, man, because you made that music move. And back then, you know, everyone was playing this type of play, but you had a feel, you made dance, you know. And then when I had the cassette, I got the cassette, but it was not Child America then at that point, wasn't it?
Yeah. We were forced to be.
Yeah. Well, I remember there were bath tiles in Dallas when I saw you the first time, you know.
Yeah, man, that's so wild, man. I can't even believe it, Dave. What a small world, man.
Well, I'm just glad that Dave came out of hiding to watch the episode of 2020 so that he could see us talk about him with you and then make you the video that everyone that is watching this or listening can
so
hear.
Great. Yeah.
And now we're all here. Is that not some fucking trippy Kevin Bacon 6 degrees shit?
It's so awesome, dude. I tell you, it's unbelievable. And I've been looking forward to it. I swear, Dave, man, I'm not bullshitting. I've been looking forward to this, man. And now I'm starting. Well, how long has it been? Jesus, I'm starting.
Coming up on an hour.
Yeah.
Starting to get warm.
In a good way, though, man. Tell the listeners what you're feeling so they can know.
You have to enlighten me because apparently this is how I'm going to get better at writing music. So
dude,
I need to learn
like
all the benefits
Hunter
of this.
Thompson there, David Abruzzese. Everyone needs to tune into 2020-D.com and look at the maniacal look on fucking David Abruzzese just laughing at Shannon Larkin. It's priceless.
Oh my God.
Man, I love you, Shannon. I love you and I appreciate
All right, everyone, YouTube, find this video if you're not watching it.
Oh my God.
Thank you for listening to part one of our episode with Shannon Larkin and David Abruzzese. Part two will be out in just a few days, or maybe it's out right now if you're listening to this in the future. Either way, check out 2020-D.com, like and subscribe to the podcast, and check out this throwback clip featuring Alex Skolnick of Testament from episode number 62.
So I've kind of been this invisible kid in school that just, you know, not popular, just not, you know, nobody you would notice, especially. And then suddenly I'm in this band, and then once the record starts selling, people are familiar with the band. Well, I was never like, you know, tabloid level famous or anything, but enough so that we could do these tours and, you know, you get a lot of the attention all of a sudden. And then, you know, you're in this town and you're, you know, around the venue, all the bars and maybe record stores around the, you know, there's people that are going to your concert. Suddenly, you know, they recognize you and they want to, and it's just, it's very strange. It's very strange to get used to it.
Bowie, Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone Magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.